Okay, call the Committee of Senate Labor and Commerce to order April 7th at 2:01, and we will be hearing four bills today. One bill, hopefully, we will pass out of committee. That is our first bill that we heard today, Senate Bill 103, Workers' Compensation for Firefighters. Then we will be taking public testimony on Senate Bill 115, Portable Electronics Insurance, House Bill 24, Extend Regulatory Commission of Alaska, Sunset, and HB 130, Residential Sprinkler Systems. And with me today, Senator Giesel, Senator Menard, Senator Pascban, myself, Chair Senator Egan. And the first bill, again, we will hear is Senate Bill 103. Hopefully, we'll be able to get it out of committee. It has one more referral, and that goes to finance. And Senator French or Cindy Smith from Senator French's office, if you can come forward, please, to answer any further questions the committee may have. And I will object for purposes of discussion.
For the record, my name is Cindy Smith. I'm staff to Senator French, and I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee has.
Further questions from the committee from the previous hearing?
Cindy, well, appreciate your consideration, Mr. Chairman.
And we're now joined by Senator Davis as well, so we have a full committee. And we're on Senate Bill 103, Workers' Compensation for Firefighters. Senator Davis, did you have any questions for Ms. Smith from Senator French's office?
Well, I didn't hear what she had to say, so I don't have any questions at this time.
She didn't have anything to say.
Oh, she didn't have anything to say. No, I don't have any questions.
Wait, thank you, Senator Davis. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that we move the CS for Senate Bill number 103, version /M, from this committee to the next committee, a referral with individual recommendations and attached fiscal bill.
Is there objection? By the way, okay, I withdrew my objection too. So,
thank you.
I'll take a brief at ease, and we'll sign the. Committee for April 7th, and next bill we will be taking public testimony on today is Senate Bill 115, Portable Electronics Insurance, and Dana Owen of my staff and staff to Labor and Commerce will present the bill. Dana, before you present, is it
back? Yes, that's lunch on.
Right. So I don't need to move.
Senator Pascan.
No, we'll need a motion to adopt.
Oh, right.
Mr. Chair, I move that we bring the CS for Senate Bill 115 version /I before this committee for purposes of discussion.
Objection. I'll object.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Dana Owen. I'm staff to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. The draft that you have before you is an attempt to bring some order into what is, I think, at this point, sort of a frontier market for a new kind of insurance. Those of you who have bought cell phones recently may have been offered the opportunity to buy an insurance policy covering the loss or damage to those items. With the expansion of these kinds of machines in our lives, touchpads, cell phones, other kinds of computers, the market for this has been explored by a number of companies. We have been approached by Assurion, which is one of the, I'm told, one of the major marketers of this kind of product, in an effort, as I'm sure you will hear from their representative, to stabilize this market and to bring some kind of order to it, so that both the consumer has more faith in the product, and the people offering it will know that that their products are both trusted and sought out. That's the purpose of the bill. I'm happy to walk you through the sections of it if you would like that.
I'd like
that. Okay. Mr. Chairman, again, Section 1 establishes that portable electronics insurance is not a service contract. Section 2 adds an applicant for a license under AS 21-27-150A, and that should, A8, I should say, and that applies to electronics limited producer license, and adds that to the list of persons to whom AS 21-27-060D, which requires a successful applicant for a license to sell insurance, to pass an examination, that doesn't apply. In other words, the person selling under these circumstances, the requirement for a license to sell insurance would not apply under certain circumstances. Section 3 adds a vendor that sells or offers portable electronics insurance to the list of persons to whom the Director of Insurance may issue a license, in this case a portable electronics limited producer license. This section also allows an employee or authorized representative of the licensee to transact portable electronic insurance at each site that the licensee does business. Additionally, under this section, an employee or representative of a licensee need not themselves be licensed, provided certain criteria are met. And Section 4 establishes the conditions under which portable electronics insurance may be sold and defines the term portable electronics insurance and vendor for the purposes of the section of the statute.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Rowan. Questions for Mr. Rowan? Seeing none, thank you, Dana. And we do have, I'm assuming, folks signed up to testify.
We do, Mr. Chairman. And if you give me a moment, I'll go get the list.
Take a brief at ease, and then while Dana gathers the... Great. We have the following people in the gallery today to provide answers to questions. Linda Hall, Director of Division of Insurance, is in the audience. If you have any questions for Ms. Hall, and also Stephen McDaniel from Assurion. Mr. McDaniel, would you like to come vote? Your name and affiliation for the record, please, and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm here on behalf of Assurion Corporation, who is the leading provider of this mobile device protection in the country. We've been working with states across the country to implement a framework for how this product is offered to consumers.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
Oh, I'm sorry.
In case I mispronounced it.
Stephen McDaniel. You did pronounce it correctly. I apologize. So we feel like this is a good balance between consumer protections. It requires disclosures. Specifically requires refunds to be provided to consumers at any time when they cancel, with prorated refunds to be paid. It also requires training of employees that are offering it. And really the gist of the framework is it creates a license that is done at the wireless carrier level. So your AT&Ts of the world will have the license, which would authorize their employees to offer the product in their store. We're supportive of it, and it's consistent with the national trend. I think there's probably somewhere between 12 to 14 states that currently have a law and there's bills pending in 20-plus other states that are similar to this bill. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. McDaniel. Questions from the committee. Senator Pascavant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Specifically, what type of disclosures do you see that you would be offering the consumer in Alaska?
Well, primarily one of the disclosures is that it may provide duplicate coverage, so we want that out there. There would be disclosures about the refund requirements and that you can cancel at any time, the premium to be paid, the benefits that are offered under the coverage, and any sorts of exclusions that would apply to coverage under the policy.
Senator Pascoe.
Are there, you know, you indicate that this is a growing trend nationally, and what I'm kind of interested in is, are there greater disclosure requirements under other state statutory schemes than under Alaska? And if so, what is it that other jurisdictions have wanted to impose as far as a disclosure requirement?
No, Senator, this is consistent with the disclosures that are being required in the other state. It's sort of the model language that's being pushed out in all the states.
Further questions? Further questions from the committee for Mr. McDaniel? Senator Giesler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is this legislation to fix a problem? What particular problem would that be?
I think this legislation is to create a regulatory certainty around how the product is offered to ensure that, for lack of a better word, the fly-by-nighters aren't coming into this market, and that consumers know that when they purchase a product, that at the end of the day, when they make a claim, that there's someone there to pay the claim. So it creates more of a certainty around how the product's offered. So it creates certainty for the industry while also providing protections for consumers to ensure that it's distributed in the appropriate way.
So there have been problems in this area?
I don't think there's been problems.
Okay.
To my knowledge, I don't think Asurion has, the client that I'm here on behalf of, I don't think they have any complaints in this market. I think it's just more of an approach where it's not quite clear how the product should be regulated or how it currently is regulated, and this just sort of sets a level playing field so people know when they come into the market, this is how they need to play. These are the rules that they need to play by.
Okay. Mr. Chair, could we have Linda Hall come up, and I'd just like to hear from her. Thanks.
Ms. Hall, if you can come forward, please.
Yes, I actually have
Senator Pascavant.
If I may.
Great.
You know, while he's here, do you sell your products to, like we have a letter here from AT&T, is this, do you sell your product to all these telecommunications and others? You know, exactly who is the market and how do you market your product?
The market, Asurion has relationships with all the major wireless carriers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and so the product is, there's a master policy that's issued to the wireless carrier, and then consumers can choose to enroll under that master policy. So it's, the point of sale is at the wireless carrier store. Does that answer?
If I could just,
Senator Pascavant.
Are all the telecommunications companies in Alaska unified in this, working through Asurion or?
ACS is a client of Asurion's. They partner to offer the product, and AT&T as well.
That's great. Thank you, Senator Pascavant. I just one more question for myself. So do you have any other problems in other markets? You're saying that the Alaska market, you don't have a problem, but you say 12 states, have you had problems in other markets?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, there may
so
be the UK.
So what you're trying to do is prevent this from happening?
It's more so to set up a regulatory certainty about how the product's offered and to establish a playing field that's level for everyone that wants to enter the market and to ensure that the fly-by-night companies that are just pushing this out there and not realizing it's a regulated product. We feel like there needs to be a regulatory framework as to how it's offered.
So we can delete our unwanted emails about buying insurance from somebody we don't know? Oh, sorry. Senator Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So is it fair to say that Asurion is the largest in the world that
Yes, ma'am.
Is that a correct statement?
Yes.
And do you feel that regulation of these insurance would lessen somehow the purchase of these devices?
Lessen the purchase of the devices or the insurance itself?
The device.
The cost of the device?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would lessen the cost of the device. I think that the initial cost is set by the wireless carrier, and pretty heavily subsidized when you enter into the contract by the carrier.
Okay. Senator Davis.
I know you asked for Linda to come up, but before she comes up, this bill was introduced by this committee, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so somebody must have invited us here, and I'm sure they didn't just come here on their own, and they didn't develop this bill. I want to know, from your standpoint, why do you feel that we need to have this bill? I hear what he's saying, and I probably agree with a lot of things that he said, but we must have something that assured us that we wanted to present this to the full body committee.
Senator Devers, there were carriers in the state that were concerned about people entering the market and trying to sell insurance from different cell phone providers that really aren't affiliated with the cell phone providers, and the cell phone market is, you know, rapidly expanding from iPads, iPods, and you know, normal run-of-the-mill cell phones. It was a concern.
I thank you for that explanation, because when he spoke, he said he didn't think there was a problem here in this
well, that's
but it has to be a problem for us to have a bill before us of some kind.
If I could just ask
Senator Pascan,
do you see that this would create monopolistic capacities for Assurity?
Yeah. I don't. Their largest competitor, Assurant, we've worked through language with them to make sure that they're in agreement with what we're doing across the country. We are not trying to create a competitive advantage with the legislation. We're just trying to create certainty as far as how the product's offered and the regulatory structure for how it's offered. The actual bill itself would, I don't think it creates any financial obstacles whatsoever. It just ensures that consumers are being made aware of what they're buying, and then they can make the decision as to buy it or not.
Senator Bassman.
Are the contracts that you enter into, and not the actual insurance, but with the companies that you do deal with, are they exclusive contracts, or can others in the industry also enter into contracts with them?
So between like Assurian and AT&T?
Correct.
Can another provider, when the contract's in place, I don't think that another provider could be offered in a given state, but I don't know the exact answer to that question, if it's a state-by-state basis or if it's national. So.
Senator Giesel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't see that this is exclusively for cell phones. It says electronic, portable electronic devices, portable electronics insurance, so that sounds like iPads and laptops. And
right. Good question. And it's not exclusively for cell phones. I think I use cell phones because that's where the product started, on cell phones, but now that you walk into a Verizon store or an AT&T store and they sell the iPads and things of that nature, they would like to be able to offer coverage on those products as well. And I think consumers like to have insurance on those products because all of us are traveling with those products daily and they break very easily.
Senator Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is the cost of this, like, say, under $10, like $8? Or
on average, it's from $4 to $7.
$4 to $7.
Yeah.
Okay.
Senator Pascan.
Is premium sharing part of the contractual relationship?
Now the premium passes through to the insurance company, the one that's underwriting the program.
100% of it? Or are there any premium sharing components of the contractual relationship with any of the, as part of any of the contracts that you have?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Further questions for Mr. McGett? Senator Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just concur with Senator Giesel. I think when we're into regulations and insurance, I think it's a good time to maybe ask Linda Hall to.
Yep. We're just trying to get done with Mr. McDaniel, then we'll invite Linda.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions for Mr. McDaniel? Great. Thank you very much for testifying.
Thank you.
Director Hall, if you'd like to come forward, please. You know the drill.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Linda Hall, Director of the Division of Insurance.
Questions for Ms. Hall. Senator Giesel.
I'll just ask broadly, what do you think about this? Is this something that you think is well-written, that we need to do, those kinds of things?
I supported the bill. I've worked with the committee staffer to work on the bill. I've also worked with Mr. McDaniel to reach agreement on language. There were some things originally that were in a model that I felt needed to be changed to fit into the Alaska regulatory scheme better. So I think we probably streamlined that. But in general, I would say I support the bill. I think there are some consumer protections that are outlined, and there's really two major parts of the bill. One of them is in AS 2127, which is our licensing chapter, and this licensing pattern kind of replicates what we do with rental cars, where you have an overall vendor who gets a license. It's called a limited lines license, but each counter person then works under that license rather than having to go through a continual stream of licensees. So this vendor becomes responsible for the behavior of those counter agents. And this is modeled after that, where the vendor would have a license with my department, my division, but the people working under that would not be required to have a license while they're transacting business. It's an incidental to a different product that they're selling. But we do have training requirements. We require a register. If we request a register of all of the employees working under that license, the vendor has to give us that. So if we have a complaint, we know where to go. So I think there are some licensing protections. There are also then under AS 2136, the section, that's our Trade Practices Act, and it outlines what has to be disclosed in writing to the consumer when they enroll in the product. And the things that I think are important are, one, they have to know the premium. They have to know what this product covers, how a claim would be handled. There are a variety of things that, as I said, are in our Trade Practices Act. And that's where we find fraud, misrepresentation, various things like that. So I think there's two different types of protections in this bill that are good for consumers.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Hall. Senator Giesel, any further questions for Ms. Hall?
Thank you.
Great. Linda, thank you very much for testifying and clearing that matter up. We don't have anyone else signed up to testify. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on committee substitute for Senate Bill 115? Seeing none, and there's no one online. So that will complete public testimony on Senate Bill 115, and we will hear the bill in another meeting. We will hold this bill and take it up again at a future meeting. Next before us is House Bill 24, extend the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And Representative Olson, you are here, Mr. Chair. Welcome to the Senate side of Labor and Commerce.
Oh, thank you, Senator Egan, and I appreciate the chance of being before your committee again. And this bill, I hesitate to say is a simple bill, but basically it's a sunset extension of the RCA. The LBNA audit came in with an eight-year request. In our finance committee, it was cut back to 4 years, primarily because there were a few outstanding recommendations. Chairman Pickett has committed to having, of the RCA, has committed to having those finished next year, but at the top of his agenda right now is the upcoming FERC TAPS balancing meetings in D.C., so we're not really expecting them to have the final recommendations done until after pretty much the whole RCA, including staff, goes and spends two and a half months in D.C. on a very important issue to us. With that, if you want to get into the specifics of the recommendations or anything more related directly to the RCA, I believe Chairman Pickett is in the room. I haven't looked, but I have a feeling that he is.
The chairman's here. He's here.
Would you like me to ask him?
He's smiling.
Oh, no. He's probably here for questions only.
And your staffer, Conrad Jackson, is here as well.
And Conrad's here, too. So. Would you like either one of them? Or?
Sarah Passman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, there's been some discussion as to whether the period of time before the decision is rendered should be compressed, and I was just wondering whether that was addressed on the House side, and or whether what your thoughts are as you know as to whether the bill stays clean or whether other issues are added in. What are your thoughts?
Through the chair, I have a bill currently in my committee addressing timeline issues. Unfortunately, we have an open docket at the RCA on those issues, on that particular utility and those issues. It is pretty much one utility that has been a ongoing concern, I believe, for 8 or 10 years. I don't believe it would be proper for me to even hear the bill until after that docket is closed out. I know that 2 years ago, both myself and Representative Seaton had net metering bills with a slightly different spin on each of them that were before the RCA, and within a day of the RCA opening up a docket on net metering, we pulled our bills, and mine came back this year. But I guess fortunately the RCA addressed the issues that were in them, and it wasn't necessary. But I don't feel it. I'm speaking only for myself. I don't think it'd be proper for me to do what would appear to be interfering with a quasi judicial process while that docket's open. But it is something that's being looked at, and I will be addressing it as soon as it gets out of the way. But I know there's frustration on the part of that one particular utility. And again, I think Mr. Pickett can plead innocent. That thing has been ongoing for, I believe, almost 10 years. Does that help?
It does. And, you know, I'm still trying to figure out this interim period of time in that 400 and some day process of where RAPA is plays a part in this, and so I
would be hesitant to even comment on that, but I would say that, and you hit it on the head in your initial comments, I am trying to keep a clean sunset bill. And again, we do have legislation coincidentally from one of the Labor and Commerce Committee members, but at this point in time I would be extremely hesitant to touch it.
Great. Thank you, Chair Olson. And Senator Davis, you have a question for the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not a question, but I would like to hear from the audit.
Well, okay. We do have Pat Davidson here.
But she's probably signed up for questions. On
she's
that.
Signed up for questions, but we'll bring her up.
Questions. I want her to tell me
we'll
about
bring
that.
We'll bring her up. And is it the pleasure of the committee to hear from the Chairman Pickett or Pat Davidson first? Ms. Davidson, come forward. Senator Davis.
I just wanted to give me an overview of the audit and what was the recommendation that was made by you in order for us to know if we were ready for the extension, if they met your requirements or in the process of meeting them.
For the record, Pat Davidson, representing the Division of Legislative Audit. Through the Chair, Senator Davis, we conducted a sunset review. There was a termination date on RCA of 2011. Based on our audit finding, we recommended that RCA, because it fulfills the public policy need and is serving Alaskans, we recommended that the RCA termination date be extended until June 30, 2019. In the prior audit, we had recommended that RCA develop regulations that would enhance the transparency, accountability, and the efficiency of RCA's decision-making processes. RCA had partially implemented this recommendation. The portion of the recommendation RCA is still working on is related to developing regulations to establish standards for certain aspects of the discovery process. In making our eight-year extension recommendation, I wanted to bring to the committee's attention there is a new audit requirement associated with the annual reports of the RCA. In particular, legislative audit needs to audit those annual reports every 2 years. Included in those annual reports are whether or not the RCA has met the statutory timelines. And so what we saw this as an opportunity to give the legislature assurance about whether RCA is meeting its statutory timeline obligations, as well as how they're progressing on their goals as set up in the missions and measures. And so we saw this as a way to communicate on a more continual basis with the legislature with regard to RCA's activities, which is why we had made the eight-year recommendation for extension.
Do you still stand by your 2019 rather than 2015 that's in here?
Through the chair, Senator Davis, we make a recommendation. It was 2019, but it's always up to the legislature to find their own comfort level in their extension periods.
I appreciate that. I'd like to hear from the sponsor as to why they decided 15 and not 19.
Don't go too far away, Ms. Davidson.
You can go through all the questions.
Okay, we'll bring the sponsor back. Senator Giesel.
Thank you. Ms. Davidson, does legislative budget and audit have the authority to institute this audit of annual reports every 2 years?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, there was a bill passed, and you're taxing my memory, I think about 3 years ago. And what it did is it set up in statute for us to conduct these audits of the RCA's annual report every 2 years. So it's a statutory mandate for us.
I see. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you, Senator Giesel. Further questions for Ms. Davidson, as long as she's front and center? Pat, thank you very much.
Certainly.
If the bill sponsor could come forward again, Representative Olson.
For the record, again, Kurt Olson, House District 33, and through the chair, Senator Davis, I would have preferred the 8 years. There were several people on the Finance Committee, including one of the co-chairs, that felt more comfortable with 4 years. They had indicated they would like to revisit it again after we get the results of what Mr. Pickett is going to do after the first of the year, but I felt comfortable with it. It wasn't my preference, but I certainly live with it. And I don't have a seat on finance, unfortunately.
Right.
So,
thank you.
Thanks again.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Davis. Further questions? Well, the sponsor sat back down, so we don't have any further questions. we have Pat Luby, AARP. Mr. Luby, if you can come forward, please. And your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Pat Luby. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP in Alaska. AARP is in strong support of HB 24. We believe Alaska needs a regulatory authority that is independent, fully funded, and adequately staffed. The RCA is the only organization in our state that protects residential as well as consumer ratepayers. It's empowered to initiate investigations, enforce laws and regulations. And our experience with the RCA has been very positive. They've gone out of their way to have public hearings in local areas so that the rate-paying public will not have to travel to attend a hearing that deals with their own utilities. The RCA is the only game in town when it comes to utility oversight. AARP recommends your support for House Bill 24.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Luby. Questions for Mr. Luby? Senator Giesel.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Luby. I see in your letter of support that at the time you wrote this, it looks like HB 24 would have extended RCA for 2 years, according to your letter. But you're supportive of the 4-year extension.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Geisel, we were actually supportive of the 8 years.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you.
Great. Thank you again, Mr. Luby. Further questions for Mr. Luby? Thank you very much, Pat. And we have Kristen Winters from Utility Services of Alaska. Ms. Winters, if you can come forward, please, and give your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, on behalf of Golden Heart Utilities and College Utilities, I thank you for the opportunity to participate and provide our comments and support for reducing the statutory timeline for rate filings as you consider House Bill 24. My name is Kristen Winters, and I am the Director of Regulatory Affairs. Golden Heart Utilities and College Utilities Corporation, along with our administrative services company, Utility Services of Alaska, serve more than 8,500 accounts and a population of more than 50,000 in the greater Fairbanks area. Many of my comments today will not be new. We have been making these comments many times over in past public meetings, past responses to legislative audit questionnaires, direct letters to the governor, and past testimony in our rate case proceedings. We understand that change can be slow. However, in the meantime, the absence of change is costly. We have filed rate cases almost annually, beginning with test year 1999, again in 2000 with incremental increases approved in 2003 and 2004. We have filed for test years 2004, 5, 6, and 8, and are required to file again for test year 2010. The cost drivers behind our filings have not changed. We still have increasing operating costs, increasing infrastructure investment needs, and our customer base is not growing. And if you look at our neighbor in Anchorage, AWWU, they have testified to the commission of their need to file rate cases almost annually as well for the very same reasons. We have experienced firsthand the consequences of regulatory lag resulting from excessively long statutory periods to resolve rate case filings. We firmly believe that a reasonable timeline for resolution of a rate case is 9 months, and that the current process simply expands to fill the available time. The rate-setting process in Alaska is outdated and has not evolved to reflect the changing nature of the utility industry or the rapidly changing economy. According to the National Association of Water Companies, Alaska's 15-month statutory timeline in a rate-setting filing is the longest in the nation, and it can be extended as well. 27 states are required to conclude their rate cases in 9 months or less. The length of the entire process is leading utilities to file pancaked rate cases because one case is not resolved before rapidly escalating costs require a second rate adjustment. This lag means that the commission has not decided the disputed issues before the utility files its next rate case. Thus, in subsequent rate filing, in order to preserve all rights, the utility includes the disputed issues, which then leads to inefficiencies and increased costs as the parties continue to debate these undecided issues. All of this has resulted in rate case costs skyrocketing into the millions of dollars. For example, circumstance required that GHU and CUC file a rate case proceeding with the RCA in October 2005 using a required historic test year, 2004. The statutory timeline of 15 months then started. A final decision was issued January 8, 2007. The resulting approved rates were based on 2004 costs which were no longer reflective of current 2007 conditions. Because of the extreme lag, the utility filed for additional relief in the meantime in June of 2006, a pancaked rate filing, which included many of the disputed undecided issues from the previous case. The excessive length of time to issue an order determining rates has many negative impacts, including increased costs to the utility and ultimately the ratepayer, and the restriction of capital investments to stimulate utility growth within a community. I urge you to support reducing the statutory timeline for the Commission to issue a final order for a tariff filing that changes the utility's revenue requirement or rate design from 450 days to 270 days. The Commission has stated that the goal of cost-based rate making is not to cover past costs, but to predict the rates necessary to yield revenue adequate to cover the utility's costs and provide the opportunity to earn a reasonable return on investment during the future period when rates will be likely to be in effect. This is from docket U054344, order number 15. Rapidly rising costs and the need for infrastructure investment, coupled with a statutory timeline of 15 months, precludes the Commission from meeting the above stated goal. College Utilities and Golden Heart Utilities support the extension of the termination date for the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. As I stated in my opening comments, the issue I bring forward today is not new. We have brought this forward many times over the past 6 years. During the 2007 legislative session, the RCA chair provided testimony on House Bill 209, stating that the RCA considered reducing the regulatory lag to be very important and that the RCA fully intends to move forward on the docket to shorten the timelines as the public utilities and the public advocate recommend. It is now 2011, and the statutory timeline has not been considered, and the issue of regulatory lag has not been resolved. The continued health of the state's utilities, balanced with providing protection to the ratepayer, demands that this issue be addressed. I thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Winters. Questions for Ms. Winters, Senator Davis?
Question and comment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The information that you gave, and I've heard some of it before because it's not the first time this has come up. Isn't there a bill on the other side, the other body that's supposed to be addressing that issue? Is there a bill already on the other side to address that issue?
There is a bill on the other side, and according to Representative Olson, he does not see that forwarding that bill at this time would be appropriate.
I don't want to get into the workings of what, you know, the House is doing over there, but I do know one is there, and there is not a like bill over on this side. Is that right? It's just filed on that one side.
It's on that side, and then we are trying, you know, this avenue to get through this avenue.
So the answer is no, it's not one over here.
The answer would be no, that there is not one on this side.
I think it's an issue that needs to be addressed. I'm not so sure that we need to have it tied into the bill that we have before us because it's just an extension. And this is my personal opinion. I haven't said anything to the chair or anybody else on the committee, and I don't know which way the committee is going to go on that. Pretty much I just feel like we're dealing with apples and oranges here where we need to deal with this one thing that's just before us. I do know that the issue that you have is a valid one that probably needs to be addressed, but I'm not so sure that it needs to be addressed in this particular piece of legislation.
Mr. Chairman, if I can respond. The purpose of the Sunset Review is for us to be able to issue our concerns, and this is an issue that, you know, we have felt strongly about in the past, we continue to feel very strongly about, and we believe that it's in the interest of our ratepayers to reduce the costs. It's in the public interest to reduce these costs, and that is why we're coming to you continually and coming to you again now.
I appreciate that. If I was in your shoes, I'd be over there probably doing what you're doing, but I'm over here. So I'm giving you my side of it. But I appreciate the fact that you're here and putting the issue on the table for us and not saying that we're not going to do anything about it, because I have the slightest idea what's it's going to go down, mm-hmm. But I just want to put myself on the record on how I feel about it.
I understand.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Waters. Thank you, Senator Davis. Senator Pascan.
You know, kind of going along the lines of some of my initial comments here, I'm still trying to figure out this
interim step, and possibly if you could explain to the committee a little bit more about that interim step, and so that we can more fully appreciate where, if any, in part of the total process, you know, some of the problems may be.
Okay. The commission currently, through statute, the statutory timeline is 450 days. The commission typically takes the first 45 days to review the filing before them and make a determination whether or not they're going to approve the filing, reject the filing, or suspend the filing for further investigation. If they suspend it for further investigation, interveners are then asked, you know, if there are any interveners, they can come forward and intervene in the docket. Typically, the Regulatory Affairs Public Advocacy Group, which is under the Attorney General, comes forward and intervenes in the docket, and they are the ones then that do the full review of the filing before them. That's where, you know, they take the majority of the time reviewing the docket and coming back. There's a discovery process that is gone through. They can ask discovery questions, to which we then have 10 days to reply. And then they file their testimony and make recommendations. The commission then reserves the last 90 days of the process after hearing to review all of the evidence before them and make their decision. So by reducing the timeline from 450 days to 270 days, the commission would still have the first 45 days for review. They would still have their last 90 days for review of the evidence before them, and it would be the time in the middle that would be reduced. And that time in the middle is where the cost can escalate. And it's because it is a quasi-judicial process. We hire attorneys. We carry the burden of proof. We hire witnesses that come before and to support our evidence and our case, as well as RAPA hires witnesses as well.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Winters. Further questions? Great. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
And now we might as well call the chair up. Mr. Pigott, if you can come forward, please. State your case.
Senator Egan, members of the committee, my name is Bob Pickett. I am chairman of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. I thought I would take just a couple of minutes and do a brief overview of the commission, sort of where we're at, and then begin to address some of the things that have been said. We are a five-member commission, an independent agency that is housed within the Department of Commerce and Community Development. All of the commissioners are appointed for a six-year term by the governor and confirmed by the legislature. We regulate utilities and pipeline companies in the state. Under AS 4205, the Utilities Act, and AS 4206, the Pipeline Act. We also have other responsibilities, for example, relating to the Power Cost Equalization Program, which we work closely with the Alaska Energy Authority, and a wide range of enterprises that we're involved with, from electric utilities, natural gas distribution, water, sewer companies, a variety of telecommunications responsibilities. And I think it's fair to say at this point in our history, we probably have as many challenges as the APUC or the RCA has ever had. Some of the major issues before us, for example, we're looking at roughly $1.5 billion in capital investment by the utilities in the rail belt alone. Those decisions are being made as we sit here. Some have already been made. And over the next 36 months, the rate-making environment will be shaped for probably the next 20 to 30 years. And that will have a direct impact on ratepayers' pocketbooks, the health of the utilities, and many of the issues that Ms. Winters has identified also apply to a variety of other utilities, too. We have, I would say, if I looked at all of the things before us, the TAPS rate case is front and center. There are 12 rate cases currently with strategic reconfiguration. In 2003, the commission worked out a memorandum of understanding with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission with the idea that to the extent possible, we would coordinate and consolidate our proceedings to avoid duplicative expense for the pipeline carriers. That is coming this fall with hearings, as been alluded to earlier this afternoon, in Washington, D.C. and Anchorage. That will be quite important to the future of TAPS. I do not disagree with many of the things that Ms. Winters did say. I've only been on the commission. I was appointed by Governor Palin in January of 2008, but I had become familiar, obviously, with some of the latter rate cases, but it is a history that goes back 10 years. I am restricted with certain things I can say about a remand from the Superior Court, so I can't really get into some of the details there, but I'm not going to say that I support or oppose a reduction in the statutory deadline from 450 to 270, or in some states have 180 days for the period. But I think it's important to sort of unpack what is behind that and identify the reasons for these frustrations and delays. And obviously, the commission is not the only player. We do not have total control under the current statutes with all of the moving pieces. We're called to be the final judge and to balance the interests. Contrary to what some folks think, it's not always just the lowest rates. We are very concerned with healthy utilities, but just and reasonable rates. The public has to have confidence in the process. We're currently involved with discovery regulations, and that's a very interesting process, and we will be coming back to the legislature and reporting at the start of the next year. But you have to balance, the need for, sort of containing and having discovery go no further than what it should, but at the same time to respect and protect the rights of all the parties so you're not infringing on their ability to make their case. So that's sort of the balance. You have to look at the role of RAPA and, how they're defining the public interest and what they're on a going forward basis, how that's going to work. But I think from a regulatory paradigm standpoint, there's some things that the commission itself can do. And we have started through an inquiry to look at how other states are doing this, to get some of the things that have been litigated in the past few years, get them in a different form to where litigation is the last thing you should resort to. I think mediation works in many cases. We've seen many pipeline cases have been highly successful using mediation. And things can change. When I first came on the commission, there was an extended period of time where no gas supply agreements were approved, and that was after very expensive litigation. But over the past couple of years, even in the tariff period, we have been able to approve 5 contracts. And so things can change, but it's going to take, the input and the hard work of, the commission, the impacted utilities, and the Attorney General. I speak in strong support of a clean House Bill 24 extension. I do appreciate the hard work that Representative Olson has done on this, and would be happy to answer questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Chairman Pickett. Questions for Chairman Sarah Bernard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly appreciated our conversation earlier, and I posed the question to you, how many employees do you have under your helm? And you shared around 50.
Yeah.
And as you sit in front of us and testify, and I realize it's utilities, it's pipeline, it's also the PEC, the power costs equalization that you're dealing with. But my particular point of interest this afternoon is when Mrs. Winters said that 90 days is the most difficult time. And then also, would you argue the point that Alaska is, we have the longest in the nation to wait for?
I think that that probably on the 450 days, I'm just looking at some of the national organizations, that does appear to be the case. I haven't, you know, jumped in a bunch of depth and looked at that, but yeah.
Sarah Bernard.
And then, you know, we all know government tends to move slow, but it's hurtful to me to realize that this is the end, of course, like we spoke earlier, you know, when the budgets are being put together, it certainly is more than reasonable that you would come forward to get more people in. I know you've lost some longevity, pretty well-educated in this field people recently, which didn't help your case much either. And I'm very encouraged that we do have a new Attorney General, Mr. Burns from Fairbanks, that certainly must understand the dilemma that Ms. Winters is speaking to.
No, and again, I think we have to look at the regulatory process as a system. You know, as Ms. Winters identified, there's a 45-day period at the front end that we're in total control over. And there is the 90-day period that we have reserved just for being able to adjudicate, make our decisions, and write a sound order. But there's a period in between that I'm not saying that our administrative law judges can't do things perhaps a little bit differently, but there's going to be some limits. It's going to take cooperation, really, of all the parties, and again, an identification of how we're approaching the public interest. Because at the end of the day, the public has to have confidence in this process.
Seminar, anything further?
I'll defer to Senator
Buesel, then Senator Passmann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pickett, I really appreciate the work that the Regulatory Commission does. It's a massive task, and you've described it. In fact, you shared with me something about 20 million pages of testimony related to the TAPS.
Discovery, not testimony.
Pardon me. Nevertheless, 20 million pages, it's incomprehensible how many boxes that might fill. So I appreciate the regulatory process in terms of protecting the public, and yet at the same time, an expedient regulatory process also protects the public. And so I'm seeing here that some balance needs to be achieved. I appreciate what Ms. Winters also shared, bringing forth that point. So one of the things I'm wondering is perhaps your task is too large. Perhaps you need significantly more staff. I think this is something that we should look at with the purpose of protecting the public. I guess there isn't really a question there, no, other than what are your thoughts on that?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, that's part of it. And there was a task force, an RCA task force several years ago, that addressed some of the staffing issues. And I, unfortunately, that these recommendations were not fully addressed. I will say with a new commissioner and deputy commissioner at the Department of Administration, I've seen some positive movement here as of late, and hopefully that will continue. But again, I think you need to step back and look at the regulatory paradigm as a system. Sometimes it's not just throwing more people at it. You've got to step back and say, does what we're doing actually make sense? Is it furthering the public interest through protecting ratepayers and, you know, giving the utilities and pipeline carriers the opportunity to earn, you know, the return and operate their business in a sound fashion? And, you know, there's many things that the process, when it gets to the litigation stage, when it's suspended, it's similar to a lawsuit. And then, through the chair, no disrespect, Senator Passmann, realizing you're from the legal profession, the lawyers sort of start to strongly influence how the process unfolds. And expert witnesses become a big part of it. And in some cases, that is absolutely necessary that happens. I'm not, and I'm just speaking for myself, this is not an official commission, I'm not convinced that that's appropriate in all cases. And we need, probably through rulemaking processes, to figure out how you sort these things out. One of our commissioners was sent to California last fall to look at sort of how they approach water and sewer utilities and the different sizes and certain types of mechanisms that can, you know, lead more towards, you know, arbitration, mediation, whatever, to where you can settle some of these issues and perhaps get some of them off the table, even if you can create certain types of safe harbors or flow-through mechanisms that the utilities can, you know, depend upon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Giesel, anything further?
I would just comment that I think California may be the worst place to go, but that's just my opinion.
Through the chair, I understand your apprehension, and I had similar thoughts, but they do have some processes for smaller water utilities that do kind of make some sense.
Great. Thank you, Chairman Bigot. Senator Pascal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it seems to me that it's this interim process of 315 days that's the wrap-up portion of the 450-day process. And what are the communications between yourself and the Attorney General's, you know, the Department of Law over the years as far as, what is it that are there any discussions on how to improve this process from their end? Or, because I'm not hearing anything mm-hmm. that your last 90 days is a problem, and I'm not hearing that from anyone. It's just, when does it get to you for that last 90 days?
We, through the chair, Senator Pasvan, we actually, the communication at the front end with wrap-up is typically we invite them to participate in certain dockets that are of critical public importance, and so there is that level of communication, but in a sense, if it goes to the suspension, they just become, in the eyes of the commission, they're another party, and we treat them as such, so we're not mm-hmm. really communicating. I will be meeting and speaking with the Attorney General after the close of the session to sort of get up to maybe the 30 or 40,000 foot level on some of these issues and see if there's different avenues that we can approach, but I don't want this to be a, throw rocks at RAPA session either, because they play a critically important role. And they have the same kind of staffing constraints that we have at the commission, and they have to make decisions about where they're going to put their staff resources. So if through the regulatory process we can figure out ways to, you know, get certain types of issues dealt with in a little different fashion, I think it's going to be a benefit to everybody.
Senator Pascal.
You know, just making my attorney comment, you know, you are, so to speak, the ultimate decider, but it seems to me it's the 315-day wrap-up process that's where the due process component of the entire procedure has to be played out. And the question is how much due process is appropriate, so to speak. I mean, you have to have due process, but you know, how long does it take to assemble, ask the right questions, mm-hmm. receive the right information, and if it's working better elsewhere, then that's where it seems to me that Alaska would be better off if we could find out mm-hmm. how to do that portion of the process much better and still afford, you know, the essential due process interests that mm-hmm. have to be honored. Mm-hmm.
Through the chair, Senator Pasvan, I agree with that, but it really does start with the statutes and the regulations that the commission promulgates to implement those statutes. And RAPA has to, you know, stay within those boundaries, and I think that it would behoove us to sort of step back and look. We last fall had a series of public meetings with different industry groups trying to identify specific regulatory or statutory conflicts or things that, you know, perhaps should be considered by, you know, the legislature for, you know, amendment, review, whatever. There's a couple of areas that came up, but it was perhaps a little bit disappointing. It's sort of like everybody would get in our busy worlds and we get used to a certain way of doing things, and it's kind of hard to step back and think about alternate ways to do it.
Well,
Senator Bestman, anything further?
No.
Thank you.
Senator Bernard.
Well, your last comment is true. It's to the detriment then of people who are suffering because we don't shorten that time. And that can be legislative, like legislative mm-hmm. like you said, so I think we're all serious about looking at mm-hmm. that, and this might not be, we're kind of going off the side here, mm-hmm. not being on point with this bill, but mm-hmm. certainly a very lively discussion that I appreciate.
No, through the chair, Senator Menard, but I do think that, you know, Ms. Winters brought up, you know, the sunset review process, it is an appropriate time to, you know, discuss these issues and sort of get them out on the table. And, you know, as the legislative auditors spend time in your office, I mean, that's good. I do want to thank the level of professionalism that they demonstrated. We, for the better part of 2010, had some of them in our office at various points, and they were very respectful and appreciated the time constraints we had and the hearings and all this. And so just for the record, express that appreciation.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Further questions for Chairman Pickett? Yes. Senator Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So now that it's all said and done in your closing remarks, you support this bill that's in front of us.
Through the chair, Senator Menard, I strongly support HB, a clean version of HB 24 that extends the commission. I, as Representative Olson, would have preferred the 2019 date, but, you know, we have to respect the will of the body, and we do strongly support the 4 years.
On that, so I'm assuming you're all in favor of the extension to 2019 if, in fact, that happened. It's not coming up today, but I'm curious.
I stated on the record before House Finance that was very supportive of the 2019. But okay. As I said, we are respectful of the process and the determination the legislature makes.
Thank you, Chair. Further questions for Mr. Pickett? Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for testifying. And before we get up to we will hold this bill and take it up very soon. Mr. Chair, we'll get it out of here. HB 130, Residential Sprinkler Systems, do we want to start public testimony on this piece of legislation? We have until 3:20 to keep the room. Should we start testimony on HB 130, what's the pleasure of the committee, or do we hold it till Tuesday? Representative Olson, if you could present the bill, and then, and if it gets late, then we can hold public testimony till next Tuesday. Mr. Chair, we don't have anybody signed up to testify, so that's even better.
For the record, Kurt Olson, representative of House District 33. The bill before you now will be short. It should look familiar to most of the committee in exactly the same verbiage. It died in both the House and the Senate on the last night of the session last year. I should acknowledge that the heavy work on this bill was not done by me. It was done by one of the members of your committee and one of the members in the House that were able to work out a reasonable agreement amongst the State Realtors Association, the State Fire Chiefs Association, the Home Builders Association, and I'm missing somebody through the chair, if you could help me, Senator Menard. Which group did I forget? Municipal League, Alaska Municipal League. Basically, what this does is establish a noticing requirement on any municipality that switches over to mandate sprinklers in single family and duplex or residential housing. The intent of the law is to get the community to be aware of the changes that their governing body make, either the city or the borough, whatever the political jurisdiction is that has responsibility for codes. And again, the heavy lifting took pretty much the entire session last year to get a final agreement. If we don't have anybody online, that's
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, we do have Paul Mickelson of the Alaska Home Builders online.
Oh, okay.
Testify.
My apology. It has been extremely non-controversial this year. In fact, no controversy at all. And I can bring up my staff to go into the details of it, but whatever the pleasure of the committee is, but basically it is a simple bill now. It was not last year.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was very controversial last year, but I commend the realtors and everybody and firefighters and people getting involved.
That was an incredible work of getting everybody on the same page.
And reaching a compromise. It went really well. And, Mr. Chair, if you can just stay in the audience for just a couple minutes.
Oh, I'll stay till the end of the meeting.
Okay. Paul Mickelson, Alaska Home Builders Association. Paul, are you online?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, if you can give your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Mickelson. It's Mickelson. And I'm speaking on behalf of HB 130, a bill affecting one- and two-family dwellings. I'm speaking here today on behalf of the Alaska State Home Building Association, representing 700-plus individuals in the building industry. There are currently 42 states that have passed similar legislation and three others that are in the process of doing so. We have pursued this form of legislation for approximately 2.5 years, as been stated. We've all come to an agreement. Therefore, on behalf of the Alaska State Home Builders Association, we are in support of this bill, and we ask that this committee please move it on to the majority for passing this year. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Mickelson. I'm sorry I butchered your last name, but we'll know now. Questions for Mr. Mickelson? Seeing none, great. Thank you very much for your testimony. We have no one else signed up to testify on HB 130. We will hold this bill until our next committee meeting. Public testimony is closed. That was it. So we won't have to continue it to next Tuesday. We have closed public testimony. Nothing else to come before the committee. We're adjourned. 3:13.